What's up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about finding and testing out small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. But enough about the show. Let's get into our next game. Crypt Custodian is the game for this week's episode. Crypt Custodian is a top-down action-adventure Metroidvania from Kyle Thompson that was released in 2024. And the game is available on PC, Switch, Xbox One, Series X and S, and PS4 and PS5. So what drew me initially was reading just a little bit about the game. It's kind of like a Zelda-like inspired. It kind of has this free roam, like you have a top-down view. It's a lot of hack and slash, but you have powers. It kind of plays like Nobody Saves the World, as well as Under Dungeon, so kind of the combination of those two. It kind of has this free roam open design, very similar to Animal Well, where you're just kind of using your intuition, looking where to go, maybe checking the map. But overall, the feel of it, kind of the charm behind it, it's kind of a little bit of a cross of like a Short Hike and Haunty, kind of silly and cute, and a little absurd, maybe a little bit of like Undertale. The game released with an MSRP of $19.99, and I paid $13.99 for it. I got it on sale on PS5. When you buy it, you get the PS4 and the PS5 copy, so I might download it on my PS4, maybe have my wife check it out as well. The game runs straight through maybe about 10 hours. If you're being thorough, trying to get all the collectibles and stuff like that, maybe a bit over 15. I've put over 5, maybe close to 6. Really being thorough with kind of backtracking. It does have that Metroidvania aspect, so like when I find something new, I go back on the map and try to see if I can traverse certain places. So I am being thorough and moving through it pretty quickly, I feel. The game does have a physical release planned, I think for Switch only. I saw some kind of a press release for a publisher called Curveball. I've never seen them. I've never heard of them doing any kind of physical releases. I don't know when it's coming out, but it was announced. And the developer, again, one person, really interesting, quite a feat here. And what's also interesting is either their sibling or their partner did the music. So it's kind of interesting just having that duo, one do the development, one do the music. But this guy, Kyle Thompson, he's also done some other games you may have heard of, a game called Sheepo and another one called Islets or Islets or whatever. I feel like I've heard of Sheepo, but I've never played it before, as well as not the other one. And I had not heard anything about this. I am pretty sure, though, I saw it on sale on the PSN storefront, kind of like a push for like, oh, new releases or something like that. More and more, I'm kind of getting caught by that. It's an interesting tactic. It probably takes a little push from publishers or in this case, whoever the individual developer is. I don't know if it linked with a publisher, but kind of annoying though, because there's obviously limited space there, but it is working because it's finding me. So I saw it and pulled the trigger and decided to give it a shot. Let's talk gameplay for Crypt Custodian. So just some of the basics, we've already kind of mentioned it, but top-down view, so very similar to games like Link to the Past back on SNES, or a game that we talked about earlier, which is Nobody Saves the World, as well as other games that kind of have a similar view and you're kind of moving around. So you'll move your character. There is a jump, and there is a dodge roll, and you'll have sort of a melee swipe, and then you'll have a button for like a special move that you can do, and this can vary depending on what ability you have equipped. So those are just the basics, but as you're progressing through the game, you're going to have a lot of platforming, which is interesting because in this top-down view, there's really only one plane. So it's not like you're going up onto higher planes or at higher elevation or anything like that. It is just you moving on this one plane, but primarily what you're going to be doing is hopping from these sort of separated platforms or islands, and they'll have varied size. So some of them might be like one block, some might be like 10 or just like a lot bigger and connected. So you're kind of hopping across these gaps, going from platform to platform over this like abyss. So there'll be gaps that you can jump. There might be bridges that connect different platforms. What is nice and interesting is that the platforms have like a phantom barrier on the edge. So I don't think you can actually walk over them, but as soon as you jump or dash, I think that barrier kind of breaks. So honestly, I feel like the game would be infinitely more complex and difficult if you could just walk right off the platforms because there's not really anything stopping you in the environment. So an interesting choice, but it certainly makes for some interesting platforming. A lot of the things that they throw at you, so simple things like moving platforms, moving bridges, crumbling platforms that'll come back after a little bit, you know, nothing new, hitting switches and having bridges that are timed or just moving. And as you're moving across the screen, like the screen will move sometimes. So if you're going up to a higher platform, the screen might go with you or it might end at that screen and then it'll go screen to screen onto the next screen. Nothing new for this kind of top-down genre. There are sort of mini sections or areas on the map that are colored differently, that are kind of like different environments, but sometimes you'll have a screen-to-screen within the same area, so it's not really exclusive there. And as you are roaming around, you are definitely going to see enemies, and a lot of these enemies are just going to be free-roaming, so you might interact with them, you might try to kill them. But a lot of the free roaming ones you can avoid or you can pass them. There will definitely be times where you have to kill certain things. Like you might have a locked encounter. A lot of the times what will happen is you'll go to a platform that may have had a couple bridges going to it. And then there's a certain, you know, statue or marker on the platform. And as soon as you get there, all the bridges kind of pull away. So you can't escape the platform. But you're going to have to kill a sequence of enemies. And this might be in waves. They'll kind of spawn in regularly. But as soon as you kill them all, you kill all the waves, then the bridges will come back. So sometimes you can avoid enemies. Sometimes you really have to kind of lock in. Really interesting combination of enemies. I would say some strong and unique varieties. Like you'll have your basic ones, at least the form factor, like ones that fly, ones that jump, ones that walk around, but a lot of variation in what they're doing. Pretty much all of them are going to have some kind of projectiles, and these will vary. Some of them will spit fireballs directly at you. Some will spit fireballs in a complete circle. Some will have sort of spikes follow them or spikes being shot at you, whether in a, you know, straight line towards you or like kind of in a circle. Some will have arrows or projectiles that they shoot that are interestingly timed. So really just a variation of what you're seeing, what things will do, the timing of things coming at you. And as you go to new areas, you're definitely going to see newer variations of this. Really unique, I would say, the variety of what you see in terms of enemies. Some of the enemies might be like jumpers, and you'll have sort of incoming warnings. Like if something is about to get shot up into the air and then fall next to you, you'll see like a red circle with an exclamation point. Or like if an enemy is jumping where they're going to land, it'll show up that. And these enemies will have varied health. There's really no indicators for how much health an enemy has. It's just like how many hits it's going to take to kill it. Normally when you get to newer areas, you will see kind of tougher enemies or they'll take longer to kill. But a lot of these encounters, it's really going to be a cacophony of a lot of different things, different types of enemies. The roaming ones are not that bad. Maybe you'll have three or four kind of in the same area that are coming at you. But if you're running, you know, more of them might follow you. When you're in these sort of locked encounters, it can get a little tough, but the waves, I think, are pretty manageable. Not just like throwing 100 enemies at you. It might be like defeat these five and then three of these will show up, things like that. But nothing new compared to games like Haunty or Nobody Saves the World. Certainly with Nobody Saves the World, I feel like probably a little more so with the encounters being kind of crazy, but similar things here. And let's talk about your character. So when you're in combat, you don't want to get hit by enemies. You have like a health bar with hearts, and I think you start with four. You can get more at some point. I think you only take damage when you get hit by an enemy attack. I think touching them does not hit you, at least with bosses. like, cause you have to run up pretty close to bosses and kind of swipe away at them. But I'm pretty sure that if you just walk next to an enemy, that's not going to do it. It's going to have to actually do a thing to hit you. And your character will have abilities that you can purchase, that you can find, and you're able to equip them. And so you have different types of abilities. You will have an active sort of power where you can only have one equipped at a time. And this is something that you will use in battle, probably when there's a lot of enemies around. But once you use it, you have to wait to recharge a meter. It's just like kind of this jar. And when that refills, then you can use the move again. I'm pretty sure you just refill it by hitting enemies, which is nice because if you're in a crazy combat scene, you know, you use your power right away and then you're swiping enemies and powering it back up. This will often be like a big move. Like the first one that you get is just like swords go around you really fast and hit a lot of enemies at the same time. But then you'll get different ones, ones that have like spikes follow you, things like that. But then you'll find a lot of these passive abilities. And I really see a parallel between this and like Paper Mario and the different badges that you get, especially because you will have sort of like a badge point system where you can expand sort of like the max number of things that you can have equipped with these passive abilities. So you'll find these around. You'll find them with certain challenges. If you beat certain challenges, you'll get them. You can also purchase these. And these are going to be simple things like your attack goes up 30% at full health, or your attack goes up 30% when your health is low, or if you're just standing there, you'll always have something going around you doing passive damage to any enemies, or you can get one of these that'll increase your max health. There's definitely a lot of these available. I think at least like 25, 30 of them. I've maybe gotten a third of these so far. And the max points, like I said, you can find ways to actually increase this. So similar to like having the badge points, you can do a lot of things out in the world and sort of open exploration. You can find challenges, find puzzles where you can get a max point and just sort of add to your max and be able to equip a greater number of these. And so a lot of this stuff you'll be needing to go to save points to configure. So you'll find a fair amount of save points. I think they're kind of few and far between in terms of being close, which is good for a Metroidvania, but it can often make backtracking a little difficult because you have to still kind of go a long way. But at the save point, obviously you're going to be able to save. If you go to the save point and sort of activate it or go into the menu, it will reset your health, which is nice, but it's going to reset all of the enemies in the entire map. So very sort of Dark Souls there. You can change your loadout of your active power, your passive abilities. You can teleport to another save point. This is nice, but what I found right away is that if you go to the map from anywhere, you can actually fast travel to any save point. So I don't really know the significance of teleporting to a save point from a save point because you can do that from anywhere, but I guess it's nice to have that option at least in the menu. So let's talk about pacing of the game. So a lot of this as you go through is going to kind of be open exploration. There is a vague sense of go until you can't, you know, sort of that Metroidvania aspect. You will be looking using the map just to see like what places you haven't gone, or like, oh, if this is kind of shaded over here, or I see a platform here that I couldn't get to before. It is very Animal Well overall. It does give you minimal direction. It doesn't really tell you where to go. There aren't really markers on the map, but there is a story path and it does kind of funnel you in a direction, whether it's because of the abilities you have to traverse or things like that, which is not very similar to Animal Well. Animal Well is just like you can kind of go in any direction and there are a couple things you need to do, but you can do them in any order. This does sort of have a story path where you feel funneled through. And when you get to different parts of the story path, there might be cutscenes or dialogue with different NPCs. Typically, there's going to be a boss or certain challenges on a platform that allow you to progress. The combination of those things, like bosses or like specific NPC dialogue cutscenes, like that's sort of telling you like, hey, this is the direction to go. But then as you progress through the story path, that's how you're getting sort of some of the Metroidvania movesets. Again, things that you've experienced before if you've played a Metroidvania, like dashing in the air or potentially getting a double jump, things like that that make traversal easier, that make you able to backtrack to areas you couldn't go before. So that's kind of that rinse and repeat that you will experience here. You might get a new thing, then all of a sudden you check out the map and be like, oh, let me go back to this initial area where I couldn't go here. If you're somebody that kind of struggles with that or gets a little frustrated, the map is really good at just sort of saying like, hey, there's an area over here that like you can only see the tip of, so like you should check back with it later. So I never felt like it was cumbersome or that I had to remember anything. The bosses in the game, these are pretty tough, I gotta say. A lot of these are multi-phase and have a really complex move set or dynamics. Different things get thrown in. A lot of the bosses will like separate into two parts or something like that. It gives me vibes of like Jotun or Titan Souls, games that we've talked about before. And you can have bosses that will be part of the story path, some that are optional where you're exploring and maybe kind of collecting things. So let's talk a little bit about some of the extras in the game. So every now and then you will get to, like I said, kind of like a challenge area that'll close off and leave you locked in until you beat it. Sometimes this is just to progress the story path. Other times you're actually doing this for something, like you're going to get a reward for it, and it's in an optional area. It's not maybe on the regular story path. Other times you're going to have different puzzles. There's a recurring one where you have to sort of shoot something that's sitting there and like deflect it depending on the angle that you shoot it, and it can only deflect off of walls. And so there's a little bit of kind of geometry physics puzzles going on with different angles. I like the variation of them and how they get a little more difficult. And like I said, those optional bosses that you might find. And all of these things, you might be finding different collectibles. These could be objects or these different pictures that you find that are kind of linked to like the story or memories, very similar to Haunty, which we talked about in an episode. You are also collecting like different spirits. You're trying to save them. I think there's maybe 20 or 30 in the game. But this is also how you're finding some of your passive abilities, and also how you're finding a lot of your upgrades to your max points. So a lot of your puzzles will have like a locked gate where you're trying to solve it by either, you know, deflecting those projectiles at different angles, or maybe you have to kill a certain number of enemies in the area, and then it'll just be like a little gray dot that you pick up that adds to your max ability points. And then you'll also have some kind of vague side quests at times. Like if you find a new NPC, they might ask you to go do something in a close by area. It's pretty kind of self-explanatory that like the direction that you're going when you find that NPC is where you do the side quest. This isn't really tracked anywhere in like a journal or anything like that, or at least I didn't see it. And finally, in terms of accessibility, there are difficulty levels you can choose from at the beginning of the game. I want to say there are at least three, probably four. So I picked hard. I think there's like a very hard one. So I've been playing it on hard. It's been tough. I've had a lot of bosses really kick my ass. And so if you're looking for a challenge, if you're someone who's a veteran at this, I would suggest at least hard. But if not, you might want to go a bit lower. I did die a lot. And when you die, you just respawn at the last save point that you went to. So be aware of that. This could be a little far away. So you want to think about if you're like going into a boss or something like that, to just go to the nearest save point. And the most amazing part about this game in terms of accessibility is you can remap all the buttons, which is amazing. Because for me, it had the swipe and dodge roll and things like that on the face buttons. And so I moved them around, and it's just so much better to play. So really, really nice to have that feature. I'm surprised I don't see that in more games. I understand whether third person or something where you're moving the camera, like it might be a little more difficult or whatever. I just think it's really great that you're able to remap the entire button layout. So shout out to Kyle Thompson for that. Let's talk about the vibe of Crypt Custodian. So visually, it's a bit cartoonish, I would say, at least in the characters. So there's a slight outlining of them, and that outline might be a different color, depending on if it's you or NPCs. I feel like it has to do with the coloration of the character. I feel like yours are pretty dark, the outlines. Some of the NPCs are white outlines. There's a lot of just anthropomorphic animals, like everybody's an animal, all these NPCs, including you. And they're a bit silly looking. Like, they'll have cartoonish cat or frog heads or whatever with silly eyes and just fixed expressions. Like, some of them are just, like, smiling with their eyes closed. It reminds me a lot of Haunty, like some of these just jovial characters or some of these a little off or a little odd ones. Environments, you'll find a lot of the platforms are like stone or wood, whether it's the platforms themselves or the bridges. Like, you'll see the bricks or how sort of like the pillars are arranged with like stone blocks, and you can see the separation between them. You're kind of seeing a lot of like worn ruins in a lot of these environments, a lot of pillars and statues of animals, which is fun. And then they're kind of overgrown with like moss or grass kind of coming through them in patterns. Like, you'll sometimes see vines hanging. And then just in general, whenever you're not looking at a platform, it's just like this abyss below. And it's kind of interesting. It has like a starry feel to it, but it's very dark. And in general, in terms of the whole game with colors, a lot of just dark colors, like grays and muted browns and greens and like slate blues that you're going to see a lot. And that's the environment, the background, and you. Like, your character has a dark outline, but they're just like, you know, like a dark black or purple or brown. There are some bright spots, like some of the green growths might, you know, get a little brighter in green. Some of your other NPCs kind of contrast you, like they're very bright colored, maybe a white outline, maybe they're light blue colored. There are some indicators, like I said, if an enemy is jumping, you'll have those red warning circles with an exclamation point, which is nice and helpful. The different projectiles pretty much all have like a color contrast. They are bright, like the fireballs are white, like the sort of spikes that come up are like a white and then like a pale red at times. And then if you get low on health, there's sort of like a red lettering that comes up right next to your character. It says low health. So little things like that, contrasting with the darkness. Let's talk about the themes and the setting. So you're in the afterlife, and this is 100% parallel with Haunty, a game that we talked about in a previous episode. You're a ghost. Something happened, you died pretty close to the beginning. You're kind of judged and you're deemed as bad, and you have to go kind of clean up. You're sent to be a custodian. So like, your first thing is you have to pick up a broom, and that's your melee weapon for you to swipe at enemies and stuff like that. But you have to go clean up, and you're on cleanup duty, and you're in the bad place. And so you're going around and you're seeing other ghosts and NPCs, and you're trying to help them. All animals, like, you're a cat. And there's a lot of frog people and animals everywhere. It's silly, like, your interactions with NPCs and sort of how they compose themselves or the things they ask you to do. It's kind of a cross between A Short Hike and Undertale. Some of them are silly, and some of them just need like a, you know, a nice little lesson, or, you know, there's a little bit about friendship and stuff like that. But then some of them are just absurd and off the wall. There might be a little bit about redemption. I'm starting to get there and get the sense as you're like making friends with people and you're collecting objects. Like, some of the things you're collecting are pictures, and they're of your life, you as a cat and like the family you were with. And so a little bit of like, you know, what went wrong, or, and again, right out of things like Haunty, Iris and the Giant, you know, getting that context of like, there was a life before this, and what is it kind of telling you about your character? Definitely more silly and tongue in cheek along the lines of Undertale than Haunty, which kind of had this somber, like really heartfelt feeling. At least for now, I'm about maybe a third to halfway through the story. I think some things might connect a little bit, but I'm not really getting too much from my character about them other than what I'm reading in the pictures. But a lot of the interactions are just kind of silly, tongue in cheek. So I like both aspects of that. And then finally, the audio. I love the music in this game. It is incredibly unique. I was looking around immediately as I was looking if there's a physical release. I was looking if there's a vinyl. I think I would jump on this vinyl. There's something about the sound in this game and the music and how it is composed. It might seem like it has a few simple instruments or piano plucks or something on the keyboard, but there's just so many interesting sounds that are clearly synthesized or just odd, like metallic tinges or like, you know, made by that instrument that has water or something like that. There's definitely like a digital synth to it, and really throws in a lot of maybe even Narita Boy soundtrack or Headlander or just like general EDM. But sometimes the tracks might be somber, like give you that feel of Haunty and some of the music in that game. It's definitely introspective, but it's more energized than it is somber. at times. I feel like the music is really where I get more of the feels from, not so much the characters or the dialogue, but really the music. It translates so much just audibly, like the sounds that you're hearing. Like, it does sound a lot like the sounds that you might hear in Animal Well, but just with a higher rhythm and a higher energy. I just really, as I'm hearing this music, I'm feeling a lot of joy and wonder and connection, even though I might not be getting it quite from the characters. But honestly, there's something about it that just feels like almost like a synth chiptune musical, because I feel like there's just musical themes, like notes and ways that the melodies will go, that really make me feel like there's just emotion in the music. So I really love it. It's really one of the highlights of the game for me. Let's wrap up the conversation about Crypt Custodian. So this is a cute, simple game with great challenge depth, I feel like, and that's one of its strengths. Just a lot of unique combinations of the different enemies and the platforming challenges kind of all at the same time, whether it's some of those locked-in things or some of the bosses. I am a really big fan of the boss designs in this game and the different encounters. I don't know if that scales with difficulty, like it's less complex, or if it's just like the hitboxes or something like that, but I'm really a big fan of how the bosses are made in this game. And it gives you this Animal Well-like feel of exploration and puzzles, and it's not so overwhelming that Animal Well was, where it just like plopped you in and it was like, just go and it's all on you. Like, there is some kind of a funneling of what you need to be doing or where you need to be going, and it's not like there are an infinite number of paths, or even at any point, like an infinite number of places that you haven't gone yet or could go or don't know if you could go. It's very limited in that way, but it's still has that feeling of exploration and puzzles and stuff like that. Where it kind of limits itself a little bit is with story, and even with customization, with combat. With the story, didn't really feel attached to the characters. Maybe it takes a little more time, but that really has limitations, I feel. And the customization, I like the passive abilities, but there's really not much else you're doing but kind of swiping and jumping and trying to get out of enemies' ways. And so for that, I do feel like the basic combat as you're exploring gets a little old, and you will find yourself choosing to run past a lot of things, especially if you've already gone through certain encounters and you're just trying to get to a certain place to backtrack or something like that. And lastly, I do wish there was more variation visually in the colors. I'd like a little more contrast of light, and I'd like a little more variation in the environments. I do feel like I was kind of in this dark kind of tomb, or just always kind of running through the same color paletted platforms, or so just missing a lot of sort of character from the environment, I feel. In terms of value, I feel like $20 is okay. I wouldn't get this for above $15. I got it for $13.99. I think that's a nice price. I think if you could find it for under $10, that's great value. I do think there is something here. This game is great for open exploration. If you're looking for a challenge and even a little bit of a collectathon, I feel like it has a lot of those pieces here. And of course, that music, that soundtrack is just, it just brings all the feels, and I really love how it adds to the experience. It's definitely not as compelling as something like Animal Well that's gonna, you know, really grab your attention, or even has the heart of Haunty, like in the characters and the story of what you're reading. But again, that music really brings it home for you. And overall, I feel like it's just a solid top-down Metroidvania with a really great soundtrack that I think is worth your time. And so I do recommend this game. Alright, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we found for you.